Well, we're continuing our series, Ask the Exiles. The exiles being the people we find in the Word of God who had been taken in the Babylonian captivity from Judah and taken over into Babylon. So they were taken by the Babylonians initially, then the Babylonians themselves were conquered by the Medes and Persians, so then they started to be the ruling force. And then eventually, in fulfillment of a prophecy made about King Cyrus of Persia, God stirred the king up and God stirred the exiles up, as many as wanted to go back into the land, to go back to Israel, to go back to Jerusalem in particular, and to start to build the temple that had been flattened, that had been destroyed. So whenever we started in the book of Ezra, we asked this question in our first study: what work is God stirring me up to do? Then the next study after that, kind of connected to that one, if God is stirring me up to do work for him, where should I begin? And then we asked ourselves this question: what kind of builder am I? And God had been using Zerubbabel and Jeshua to get the building work underway, but they'd had a few setbacks as well. They had a wee bit of opposition. And that's kind of where we've brought the story so far. And not only that, but there was a problem within them themselves, the exiles themselves. They had, yes, been stopped building, but they latched onto that. They milked that. And they started then to build their own houses. They started to make farmsteads and homesteads for themselves. And they never even thought about even asking God or praying to God and saying, Lord, how can we get back to building the temple again? They just neglected the work of the house of God. And it was in that setting that Haggai the prophet spoke to this very group, Haggai 1. And twice in that chapter, this is the exhortation that comes from God. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. Well, between Haggai and Zechariah making these prophecies and giving exhortations, and all the things that God sent, crop failure, everything they did, two steps forward, three steps back, all of these things started to speak to the exiles, and eventually they listened. Eventually they got back on track. Eventually they decided, right, we have offended God, we need to put this right. So that's where we left off, and we're going to continue now into Ezra chapter 5, and we're going to look this week at our study around this question: who is my master? Who is my master? So Ezra 5, we had already read verse 1, so we're going to read verse 2. Then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. And with them were the prophets of God helping them. The prophets of God were helping them. Maybe you're asking, in what way? Were they picking up a hammer and chisel? Were they putting their back into it? I think that what's being referred to here is, as we know, it's Haggai and Zechariah. I think that the way they have helped them was through their encouragements, through their spiritual exhortations. Here's some of the things we didn't look at last week. We were mostly in the book of Haggai, but here's some of the prophecies in the book of Zechariah, some of the exhortations that we read there. Zechariah 1 and 3, therefore say thou unto them, that's the exiles, thus saith the Lord of hosts, turn ye unto me, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will turn unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. Three times the Lord of hosts is mentioned there. That's for emphasis. It's one of the strongest titles that we have for God, the Lord of hosts. And so the Lord's saying to him, look, you turn to me, I will once again turn to you. Then in Zechariah 2 and verse 8, we read this, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, there's that mighty title again, he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. Isn't that amazing? Here is a group of people who have not only let God down personally themselves, but they have faced opposition. And the Lord has something to say to them. He says, whoever touches you touches the apple of my eye. Then in Zechariah 3 and 2 we read this. And the Lord said unto Satan, the Lord rebuke thee, O Satan. Even the Lord that hath chosen Jerusalem rebuke thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? I like that. I like the fact that the God who's on my side today, the God who's on the exile's side, the God who's on your side if you're saved, is able on our behalf to rebuke Satan. Isn't that wonderful? And he's also able to say, I have chosen Jerusalem. I'm going to do something in that place. And Satan, you're not going to mess that plan up. I am going to do this. And then in Zechariah 4 and 6, then he answered and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. So can you see, just from Zechariah alone, there were many others, I just picked out those few, many other exhortations, many other things that if the exiles read them, it would have encouraged them. So when we read there at the beginning, the prophets of God helping them, I think that would be pretty good help, wouldn't it? To have somebody come along and say, this is what God is doing, and this is what God can do. So the Lord of hosts is the conqueror of Satan, and he's the manipulator of kings. He's still that today. He's still the conqueror of Satan and the manipulator of kings. They might think that they are moving all the pieces on the chessboard of this world, today's kings and rulers, but we have one who's above them. So the prophets of God helped the exiles to make a spiritual assessment of their situation and then move forward. Verse 3, Ezra 5. At the same time came to them Tatnai, governor on this side the river, and Shethar Bosnai and their companions, and said thus unto them, who hath commanded you to build this house and to make up this wall? In other words, they're saying, who said you could do this? What authority have you to restart this building program, which was shut down some years ago? Who do you think you are? It makes me think of an incident that happened when I was a member of the Portrush Church. And on the May Day weekend, the first one in May, we always had a special outreach in the Sunday afternoon down at the amphitheatre near Barry's. And the male voice choirs would come, and we would have a brilliant open air and then move into the church later in the evening for a gospel meeting. But remember, the male voice choir was all assembled, and this random person came walking past and started to shout and says, you have no permission to be here. Now, other onlookers might have thought, he knows something, and these people are breaking the law. But here's the amazing thing. What that heckler didn't realise was that the mayor of Coleraine was a member of Portrush Baptist Church and was there that day. And of course it was Coleraine Borough Council's territory. So it was kind of a sense of trying to frighten, trying to make the people gathered there think, right, these boys are up to no good. They have no permission to be here. And this guy's coming along as well, and he's trying to instill that fear. He's trying to make them uncertain. Trying to make them wobble in their faith. Did you ever wobble in your faith? Well, if you haven't done, it's probably coming. And sometimes people cause us to wobble in our faith. Who has commanded you to build this house and make up the wall? And then the end of verse 4. What are the names of the men that make this building? What's your name? I know you're all angels in here, but when I was growing up, there was plenty of mischief that happened out in the streets and in the area where I lived. And sometimes whenever you're getting up to some no good, all it took was somebody's dad to come on the scene and say, I know who you are. I know your dad. We would nearly rather have gone to jail than go home and think that that person had gone and told my dad what I was up to. And you know what you were coming home to, of course. I know your name. I know where you live. I know your dad. And that again was instilling fear. It was to get them to think, we shouldn't be doing this. They're trying every tactic they can think of to stop the work and to chisel away at their confidence. That's why I read those verses out of Zechariah. Because in all of this that's happening, they would have had Zechariah's encouragements. You know, things will come your way. Difficulties will come. People will try to trip you up. It's important that you know the word, isn't it? It's important that we have, as we said to the boys and girls last week, have hid God's word in our heart, because then we're able to do as Jesus did in the temptation in the wilderness. It is written. It is written. It is written. Verse 5. But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, that they could not cause them to cease, till the matter came to Darius, he was the king, and then they returned answer by letter concerning this matter. So, another tactic has to be employed here. But in the meantime, the leaders of the exiles keep going. I like that. They keep at it. And the reason they do so is the eye of God was upon them. If I said, I have my eye on you, that could be a negative thing, couldn't it? I'm watching you. But whenever we read of it in this context, it's completely different. The eye of the Lord was upon them for good. That reminds me of what we read in Psalm 32, verse 8, the Lord speaking, I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will guide thee with mine eye. How many times has somebody not sent us that wee verse and it has really helped, hasn't it? It has encouraged us. Psalm 33, verse 18. Behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy. That's the kind of master you want. Who is my master is our question. The Lord of hosts, the conqueror of Satan, the manipulator of kings, and the one who has his eye on you today. Is that encouraging? Verse 6, Ezra 5. The copy of the letter that Tatnai, governor on this side of the river, and Shethar Bosnai and his companions, the Aphersachites which were on this side of the river, sent unto Darius the king. They sent a letter unto him written, what unto him wherein was written thus, unto Darius the king all peace. Be it known unto the king that we went into the province of Judea, and the house of the great God which is builded with great stones and timber is laid in the walls. This work goeth fast on, I like that too, and prospereth in their hands. Then we asked those elders and said unto them, who commanded you to build this house and to make up these walls? We asked them their names also, to certify thee, that we might write the names of the men that were the chief of them. And thus they returned us answer, saying, and this is important, it's basically regarding the question that we are considering today. We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth. Is that your testimony today? Maybe not. Well, you can get saved before the end of the meeting. We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth. Isn't that wonderful? So who is my master? The God of heaven and earth. What a clear testimony for them to give. Isn't this evidence of the change that has happened in their lives? Because they've gone now from serving their own interests, which had led to failure, and they'd gone from neglecting to do what pleased the Lord, he had sent them to build the temple, to now publicly declaring their allegiance to the God of heaven and earth as faithful servants. Verse 11. And thus they returned us answer, saying, we are the servants of the God of heaven and earth, and build the house that was builded these many years ago, which a great king of Israel builded and set up. And that shows us the pride the returnees had in looking back to the days of King Solomon, who had built the first temple. Those were the glory days. You had David's reign, King David followed by King Solomon, and then, of course, everything was divided after that. But those reigns stood out. David, the great conqueror, and Solomon, the great builder. And amazingly, the exiles tell those Persian officials where things went wrong in Israel. They explained where the neglect of their God and his word could lead to. Because in verse 12, we have a but. But after our fathers had provoked the God of heaven to wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried the people away into Babylon. Now that might have been true, and it was true, of course. But it wasn't the whole story. You see, had the exiles left the story there when they were talking to these Persian officials, then the Persian officials might have been led to think that the God of heaven and earth was only a God of wrath, God of judgment, albeit a God of righteous judgment. But they continue with the story in verse 13, another but. But in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, the same king Cyrus made a decree to build this house of God. So in this short response that they give when they were asked, who told you to build this house? What are your names? In this short response, there's so much packed in. Because they're saying, really, the God of Israel isn't just God of an ethnic group of people. In other words, the descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel. He isn't just that. He isn't just the God of the land of Judah, or even the whole of what was the promised land. He isn't just a God of a region. He's the God of heaven and earth. Who's my master? The God of heaven and earth. And he's a God who has many servants. Yes, they have declared themselves to be the servants of the God of heaven and earth. But God was able to use Nebuchadnezzar as a servant. God was able to use Cyrus the Persian as a servant. Because God can use anyone he chooses to fulfill his purposes. Nebuchadnezzar was used to chastise Judah's fathers. And then Cyrus was used to get the people back into the land. And in all of this, we can see that, yes, God is a God who has to correct, but he's also a God who's long-suffering. He's a God who's merciful. He's a God who's loving. He's a God who's gracious. And he's a covenant-keeping God. He's a God who fulfills his promises. And all of that is found in that very short, succinct, simple little answer that was given. It was a good answer. It was an honest answer. It was a confident answer. Not confidence in the people, but their confidence in the God of heaven and earth as their master. Have you confidence in your master this morning? We should have. We should have. Back to verse 13. But in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, the same king Cyrus made a decree to build the house of God. And then in the next couple of verses, we know the things we've already read, how that whenever they were to go back, they were to take back the vessels of the temple and so on. Verse 16. Then came Sheshbazzar and laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And since that time, even until now, hath it been in building. But get this line. And yet, it is not finished. Now, we're in the middle of a refurbishment and renovation here, and we're in the middle of it, so it's not finished. But it will get finished one of these days. But here was a work, and years had passed that this work should have been finished. The temple should have been up. And yet it is not finished. That's rather sad, isn't it? An unfinished work. Tell me, ladies, are there any unfinished DIY jobs in your house? There's a lot of chuckling going on and rolling of eyes. Is there a hole dug in your garden that has been going to be a pond for the past 10 years? Now it's just a death trap. Yeah, I've been around a number of homes in my life, and I can see there's a lot of wishful thinking. There's a lot of unfinished projects. Do you know, I'm an unfinished work. You'll be glad to know that. The Lord's still working on me. Still working on me. Philippians 1 and 6. Being confident of this one thing, that he, that is God, which hath begun a good work in you, will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. He hasn't given up on me either. I'm not what I should be yet, but he's still working on me. And I take hope and I take comfort in that. And then one day, everything will happen very quickly. One day, I will be changed in a moment, the twinkling of an eye. When I see him, I shall be like him, for I shall see him as he is. Isn't that wonderful? Our God is a God who finishes his projects. Think about the last words of Jesus on the cross. Finished. Finished. And in John 17, which is the real Lord's Prayer, Jesus says this to his Father, I have glorified thee on earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. Do you know the interesting thing about Jesus? Way back in Isaiah 52, he's described as the perfect servant. The perfect servant. And all of us who are servants of the Lord, we can look to Jesus. He's our example. Are we serving like him? Is our service something that Jesus would recognize and see himself in it? Paul, writing to the Colossians, mentions Archippus. And say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry which thou hast received in the Lord, that thou fulfill it, or that you accomplish it, that you complete it, that you finish it. And then Paul said this of himself in writing to Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 and 7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. And that's just not him saying, I've run out of years of life. He's talking about a course there. That's a word that relates to the service of the priests in the tabernacle and temple. I have finished my course. I finished what God's ministry was for me. And here's what happens when we finish well. I've kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them that love his appearing. Who is my master? An unfinished work that we leave unfinished. It's not a good reflection, is it, on the God of heaven and earth? It's not a good reflection on our master. Chapter 5 and verse 17. Now, therefore, if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house. This is still the exiles answering and saying, look, we haven't made this up that we should come and build the temple. We are doing this because we were instructed to, because God stirred up King Cyrus, and King Cyrus made sure it was available to us to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. And Cyrus issued a decree. So really what they're saying is, now therefore if it seem good to the king, let there be search made in the king's treasure house, which is there at Babylon, whether it be so that a decree was made of Cyrus the king to build this house of God at Jerusalem. And let the king send his pleasure to us concerning this matter. Now when we eventually, if we ever do get into the book of Esther, we'll see, I think, three times there's a reference made to going back and looking over past records. So they must have been very, very, very good record keepers, and some great ancient civilizations were. And really what they're saying is here, if you go back through the annals of the law, you'll find this. And then in chapter 6 and verse 1, then Darius the king made a decree, and search was made in the house of the rolls, where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. And there was found at Achmita in the palace, that is in the province of the Medes, a roll. A scroll, we could say. And therein was a record written thus. And it's exactly what we've said before. You're to go back, you're to rebuild the temple, you're to take back all the gold and silver vessels that were stolen, and you're to be assisted in this in any way possible. So they made the thorough search. There it is, preserved in the record office, the original decree of Cyrus. You know what that makes me think of? Isn't it sad that today, we as Christians, we have to actually go to law. We have to go through the courts to defend our rights, which are enshrined in law, for the freedom of expression and the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion. We have to go, and when we're let down by the Crown Court and we're let down then by the Court of Appeal, we have to end up at the Supreme Court to do what? To get somebody to wise up and say, yes, there it is. There's the law. These people do have that freedom. Isn't it sad that there's so much fluidity in the interpretation of the law in our courts? Shocking. And we today find ourselves saying, go back, there's the law. Of course, it'll soon be they'll have changed the laws, and we won't be able to do that in the same way. But we still serve the God of heaven and earth. Don't panic. Chapter 6 and verse 6. Now therefore, Tatnai, governor beyond the river, Shethar Bosnai, and your companions, the Aphersachites, which are beyond the river, be ye far from thence. Let the work of this house of God alone. That's coming from the top. Be gone. Give them peace. Let them get on with it. Let them build this house of God in his place. The end of verse 7. Moreover, this is coming from the top. It's coming from the king. I make a decree what ye shall do to the elders of the Jews for the building of this house of God, that the king's goods, even of the tribute, that's a tax, beyond the river, forthwith expenses be given unto these men, that they be not hindered. So leave them alone. Don't hinder them. Stay well out of the way. And then he says, do you know something? Do you see that those budgets you have that you make up from the taxes that you're collecting? Set some of that aside to help rebuild the temple. What a turnaround. And that's not the end of it, verse 9 of chapter 6. And that which they have need of, both young bullocks, rams, lambs, for burnt offerings of the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, and oil, according to the appointment of the priests which are at Jerusalem, let it be given them once, no, day by day without fail. God can use ravens. He can also use kings. Day by day without fail. We're not good at trusting day by day, are we? Well, I'm not. We like to think that we have a roughness past us at all times, don't we? There's always enough there to cover this, that, and the other, and a bit saved, and we'll not be caught out if we need to change the car down the line. And we're not good at living day by day. But there are people who are living day by day. I'll tell you, if you're living in the Ukraine at the minute, you're living moment by moment in certain parts of it. Isn't that true? Sadly. We don't really know anything about that, do we? Without fail. God was going to provide, and he can use anyone. Who's my master? Well, Ephesians 3 and 20. Him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. And we don't often go on to quote the next wee bit either. Unto him be glory in the church by Jesus Christ throughout all ages, world without end. Amen. So we come to verse 10 and we get a wee bit of a hint that there's a bit of a selfish reason why Darius is so keen to help and to get this temple built. Ezra 6 and 10. That they may offer sacrifices of sweet savours unto the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and of his sons. We'd said that before, hadn't we? These polytheists, these people who believed in many gods, they sometimes believed in gods of regions. And they would have thought, right, well, there's no temple in Jerusalem. It's been destroyed. We don't want to offend the God of the promised land. Let's get that temple up and built just in case. Just in case. Not only that, it'll be another temple for another bunch of priests to be pleasing God and doing so on my behalf. A lot of these rulers, they just didn't care from what quarter the prayers came from, as long as they were going to be prayed for him and for them. Get another temple built so that more people can be praying for me and so that I will succeed. Let them offer sweet sacrifice of sweet savours unto the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. And then he ends up with a warning, Ezra 6 and 11. Also, I've made a decree that whosoever shall alter this word, let timber be pulled down from his house. And being set up, let him be hanged thereon, and let his house be made a dunghill for this. Now, there's nothing terribly shocking about that, because we've already had Daniel thrown into lion's den. We've already had the three Hebrew children thrown into the fiery furnace. So we can see how these people think. Verse 12, and the God that hath caused his name to dwell there, destroy all kings and people that shall put to their hand to alter and to destroy this house of God which is at Jerusalem. I, Darius, have made a decree, let it be done with speed. Then Tatnai, governor on the side of the river, Shethar-Bosnai, and their companions, according to that which Darius the king had sent, so did they speedily. That's interesting, because obviously Tatnai and Shethar-Bosnai were servants of Darius, were servants of the kings of Persia. And they did what they were asked with speed. Do you know, when it comes to the servants of the God of heaven and earth, doesn't he have to drag us screaming and kicking at times? Doesn't he have to speak not once but twice and maybe more? Doesn't he have to bring things into our lives to shake us up? How many of us answer the Lord speedily? How many of us react to the Lord's word speedily? So they did it speedily. Verse 14. And the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they builded and finished it. We've got there. They builded and finished it. Who's my master? What kind of a servant am I when I think of who my master is? Am I letting my master down? Am I slow to respond to my master? Have I forgotten that my master is the God of heaven and earth? May we today be quick to respond to him, whatever he's asking us to do. May the Lord bless these thoughts to our hearts for his name's